FTN Fast Break Podcast, Thursday, November 21st, 2024, episode 24. What is going on, everybody? Zach Graham, aka Kawisenberg, DFS. It's Thursday. That means the Fife Dog is in the building. It's Adam Pfeiffer. And Adam, the streak is over. What do we do now?
Give up. Season's done. No, man, like, if you told me before the season started the Cavs be 16-1, I'd take that every single day.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that game. I got to watch it, even though I can watch most games now, but it was a nationally televised game, and we'll talk about it. But yeah, 16-1, we don't have to mention the streak anymore. And we can probably, after today, unless the Cavs go on another 15-game winning streak, like slowly ease away from talking about the Cavs on every episode. But
yeah.
I do want to talk about the Spurs today, which we will, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, but you know you're going to get some Spurs talk here, right?
I don't think
we mentioned them on Monday. But yeah, there is certainly some Spurs talk to be had. But wanted to start with the Cavs, because I think that's how we've opened every Thursday episode of the last month. And again, with good reason, but now can maybe fade that into the background till they come up again. But just to add to your point about, like, you would take 16-1 at the beginning of the season, I think almost any fan base would. The fact that the one in the loss column came to the defending champs in a very highly competitive game.
Weird game.
Again, yeah, I think, and let's talk about the game more at length, because we know that was the showdown that we've all been waiting for. The Cavs made it to their cup game group stage matchup against the Celtics undefeated. Both teams relatively healthy, right? Porzingis on the mend, apparently. He's really the big piece that was missing from that game. But Cavs come out kind of trailing single digits throughout the first half, but then it opens up, and I want to say it was like an 17 or 18.
It got up to 21 at one point.
Okay, yeah, but then Cavs come storming back in the middle of the third quarter.
So there's like this talking point around the NBA, and not the NBA, but like the fans and the people who, mm-hmm. you know, cover it and stuff like that. It's like, is the Boston three-point barrage like fun? Do people hate it? I have no problem with it, except when they're playing the Cavs and they start off 64% from three in the first half. Nothing is more tilting in the world than that, I swear. But yeah, like you mentioned, like the Cavs, I was worried going in because they were without Strus, Wade, Okoro, and I was like, okay, Sam Merrill's going to start, and he's going to have to cover Jaylen Brown. He fought his ass off defensively. We'll talk about it, though. The main talking point was Darius Garland, who I had some concerns about in the playoffs last year, being too passive, and I could kind of I didn't expect 3-for-21.
Right.
But early in the game, I could tell it was going to be a bad Garland game. He was getting Horford was just playing drop coverage the whole game, and they were getting switches with Garland against Horford, and he just wasn't winning that matchup. And then there was other plays where he was like hesitant whether he was going to take a floater or throw a lob, and it was just some ugly shots and turnovers. So I was a little bit worried about that. Did not expect 3-for-21. Having said that, if you told me that the Cavs would be without pretty much the main wings that are going to be in the rotation, especially defensively, and Garland would shoot 3-for-21, and they'd be down by 21 in Boston, and Boston would shoot like 64% from three in the first half, and they would only lose by three. That's why I'm not too discouraged. And again, like it's one loss, and it's to the best team in the NBA. And we've talked about the Cavs at length. I have always still held true that Boston's the best team in the league. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, like, I think the Cavs win that game if Garland gives you a C-minus game, a C game. And down the stretch, we saw it, man. If they played through just strictly Mobley Mitchell the entire early to mid third quarter, fourth quarter, I think they win that game, because we saw it in the playoffs, even though it was only a five-game series. Without Porzingis, they have nothing for Mobley. And Mobley's so much more aggressive attacking mismatches now. But, yeah, I mean, I thought Cleveland fought their ass off, and I think not even adding if they have Wade, Okoro, or whatever, because they're fine players, but they're not players that move the needle like, oh, the Cavs would have won the series if they had Isaac Okoro. I think they win that game if Garland gives them, like, a C-plus game.
Yeah. I think that's totally fair. Well, and you, Mobley, right? 22, 11,
he's so six. Good. He is so good. Like,
yeah,
he's so good. Oh, yeah, my God.
Stealing a block on 8 of 13. And if we would have done a live reaction pod at halftime, Donovan Mitchell would have been in the garbage bin with Darius Garland because it was a very poor first half from him.
Their offense went back to being really, really just stationary, which was really pissing me off. All season long, Kenny Atkinson's talking about cutting. And people say, oh, cutting is bad because it ruins spacing, especially when you have 2 7-footers. But the cutting has been opening up all these threes. And there wasn't really any of that, especially in the first half. But Mobley and Mitchell in the second half pretty much carried. They actually got pretty good contributions from Craig Porter. And then last night, they were obviously at any point not going to lose when the Pelicans have 9 players in the rotation
pretty
much out.
The Birmingham Pelicans last night.
But Ty Jerome just continues to be amazing. Boston's really, really good. Surprise. Tatum. Is Tatum the MVP right now or is it Jokic?
It's Jokic for me.
Tatum's got to be.
I don't think it's super close.
Tatum's got to be too, Tatum's though, right? He's
Maybe
playing
Anthony,
so well.
Anthony Davis is up there for me too.
Yeah.
You know, I think Steph on the outside looking in, but you look at the Warriors first place in the West right now, and it's hard to say that he's not on the, what is the league called, right? The MVP ladder, right? Steph has a rung on that ladder right now, for sure. Right, Donovan Mitchell kind of salvages the stat line, 35 points, 8 boards, 3 assists, but on 29 shots. So it wasn't a good overall game to me from Donovan Mitchell, but I enjoyed the mic'd up segments from the game where he's encouraging his guys, kind of bring a dose of reality to their timeouts right on the bench, talking about, look, we know we're not playing well and we're only down, you know, 6 points or whatever it was at the end of the first quarter. I don't think I can give anybody an A+ in a loss, but the Cavs bench was an A right on the fringe there.
And again, you think, okay, if they have one of Wade or Okoro and obviously Strus, like one of the, if their perfect lineup exists, Strus starts and then they're still like, they're still missing 2 bench players. So that's what I'm saying, man. That's why I'm so much more confident about this team, because they have, like, they're running sets and offense through Ty Jerome when he's out there. Like, he's been, I think he leads the NBA in 3-point percentage. It's him and Jokic, I think. And Jokic, obviously, the volume's not quite the same. But, yeah, the bench has been awesome. Mobley's been awesome. Jared Allen, quietly, even though it's been kind of swept under the rug, hasn't been great this year, but you're not worried about him. I'm as encouraged as you can be after that game, despite the loss, because not a lot really went right for them, and they fought and only lost by 3 to the defending champs, who are the best team in the NBA. But I'll tell you, man, there is nothing more tilting than watching that team just hit 3 after 3 after 3. And it's like, I'm doing a lot of the obviously charting and stuff for us, and noticing the Cavs, they're playing zone at the second highest rate in the NBA behind, of course, Miami. So zone against Boston is an interesting strategy. If there's one team that can shoot you out of a zone, it's probably Boston. But overall, I'm encouraged. It's just they were going to lose eventually. They lose the defending champs. It'll happen. But, I don't think this game moved us off the Cavs being a top 3 team in the East.
Yeah, no question. I think I'd be hard-pressed to hear an argument that they're not solidly in the top 2. Like, I think, again, you can say that there's teams that are on the fringes that have underperformed so far to start this season, but like the Cavs, this is real, man. Like, we knew it before this Boston game, and to me, even in the loss, just reinforces to me how strong this team is and the chance that they have to try to compete throughout the full regular season for this top seed in the Eastern Conference. And you mentioned Ty Jerome. He is second to Jokic. Like, shout out to Jokic. Jokic is 56.4% from 3. 3.9 attempts per game. It's not like he's limiting his volume there. I want to say that's probably up from his career averages, but Jerome right behind him, now shooting 59 from the field.
Dude, he had he had a Mitchell-esque heat check last night, and it was fantastic. Like, he's playing with so much confidence.
27 real points in the first half against the Pelicans. Scrubs there last night. let's talk about some of the other cup games that happened on Tuesday night. Lakers moved to 2-0 in their group, in their NBA Cup title defense, right? Beating the Jazz. And the story here was the rookie Dalton Knecht. 37 points, including a stretch in the second half of 18 straight. So we'll talk a little bit more about the rookie class later, but Dalton Knecht seems to have, I think right now, locked down a starting spot here in LA. Did you get a chance? I know this is late for you out there on the West Coast. Did you get a chance to check out any of that, or maybe the highlights the day after?
I caught glimpses of it, especially when I opened up Twitter and everybody was talking right. about the performance, right. so I had to turn it on. Yeah, I mean, this is what they need. Like, they just need, obviously, any LeBron-led team needs more shooting. They've been playing through Anthony Davis more than pretty much they ever have since he's been there. And yeah, I still think, like, a trade probably needs to happen for this team to get out of the Western Conference. But if you're getting contributions from him this early, now, obviously, 37 points, probably a really good chance that's his career high for the rest of his career. But to have that explosive shooting with LeBron and Anthony Davis, like, yeah, I mean, that's huge for them.
Yeah. I mean, he's a real player. And I think a lot of
super experienced, obviously.
Yeah, a lot of people thought that coming into the year, and it's kind of just playing out that way, the Lakers' belief. And us saying that they were very lucky for Knecht to fall to them, that is certainly playing out here early in the season. Back east, Brooklyn takes down the Charlotte Hornets by one behind 34 points from Cam Johnson. But Adam, to me, the story coming out of this, Coach Charles Lee benched LaMelo Ball for the final 3.5 minutes for lack of defensive effort. And that's not something you want to see as a Charlotte Hornets fan or somebody who is heavily invested in LaMelo Ball in any sort of season-long fantasy or betting capacity. I don't think this is something that's going to linger, but it's something I have my eye on as we head into this weekend's games, because it's not like this is the first time we have had concerns about something like this with LaMelo Ball.
Yeah, I think it's just something that, you know, coaches will do from time to time. I'm sure it's happened to, I don't want to say it's happened to players like in the like Steph type tier of players, but other players in LaMelo's tier at point guard, I'm sure they've been benched for periods of time for defensive issues. So I don't think it's anything to really pay attention to. Brooklyn continues to just play tough, though. I know Charlotte's like they're kind of in the same level in terms of talent, but like Brooklyn continues to be quietly a nice story in the whatever the hell is going on in the Eastern Conference landscape other than Cleveland and Boston and Orlando, really. We probably thought they'd be it'd be like them and Washington as the clear worst teams in the NBA. Washington, like, the one thing I'll say about the Eastern Conference, quote-unquote bad teams, is, like, they are not, for the most part, they haven't really been, like, layups for a lot of these teams, which has been fun for the league. I mean, we had a lot of teams like Utah, Washington, Portland, Brooklyn. A lot of these teams are still playing really, really tough. And you mentioned that last episode. It's like, yeah, these teams are, these management teams are trying to lose games, but the players, they don't get that memo. They go out and play every single game.
Yeah. Well, I think the big surprise from Tuesday's group stage games was actually in my neck of the woods. Spurs beat the Thunder with no Victor Wembanyama, no Devin Vassell, no Jeremy Sochan. You have a Keldon Johnson explosion game, knocks down 6 threes. I think it was his first six, Adam, and then he missed his next six.
Dude, I'm watching that game, and I don't obviously get to watch a lot of the Spurs. This will be the year I get to watch them because I believe they're on primetime more than they've obviously been. Yeah. They have a Christmas game too, right?
They do, against the Knicks. And simultaneous with Steelers-Chiefs, which is not going to be good for my Christmas Day mental health. And I'm sure my family's going to be looking at me sideways, but yes, indeed, Christmas Day game for the Spurs.
That'll be fun. Keldon Johnson, I don't know how Oklahoma City didn't block 8 of his shots because he might have the slowest release I've ever seen.
Slingshot engage.
It's actually, I've really not watched him enough to notice it until the other day. Holy hell, it is slow. And then yeah. He had that one highlight where he did that little jab step on Aaron Wiggins, yeah. And then proceeded to dunk on SGA, which was pretty fun.
Yeah, it was a nice little highlight there for Keldon, who, of course, affectionately known as the big body. I don't know if you also noticed watching that game. It's kind of regular body now, right? dropped a lot of pounds.
That doesn't have as good of a ring to it, though.
I know, and you know, I think just Keldon Johnson making that adjustment. We'll see. I don't personally think it's been serving him that well this season, but he was knocking down his shots, so the stat line really helps the Spurs get over the top there. You really got two options with Keldon Johnson. It's either that slingshot three, slow release, or he's driving head first into four defenders at the rim. There's no in between. Also, I would just say welcome back Charles Bassey, because he has been active over the last couple of weeks, but tore his ACL last year with Wembanyama out, is getting all of the backup minutes, and he's just a guy I have some affection for the way he plays, right? He's kind of a down there in the paint, boxing out, very physical, you know, kind of doing all of the dirty work that you need out of a backup big. And I can certainly appreciate that. So he had a nice night, and it was a good win for the Spurs team that was very much, you know, double-digit underdogs coming into that one at home.
Yeah, I just want to talk about this because he would have been my stock up, but I changed it. So I do want to talk about him while we're on the Spurs. And we kind of talked about him last week, but Stephon Castle looks pretty good. And I noticed a lot of, I think he had 7 turnovers in that game with like 8 assists. But overall, like, his vision has looked pretty good, especially in that game. And then you talk about the versatility he has with the size and everything. I know you are, but, you know, San Antonio fans should be pretty excited about him, especially when you get to, you know, play alongside one of the greatest point guards of all time. I'm sure it doesn't hurt your maturation progress in the NBA. Yeah. I just, when I saw Wemby was out, though, I immediately got a little bit annoyed because I would have loved to see what he could have done against this team without zero rim protection, because Hartenstein didn't play in this yet, so that would have been fun to watch. Jalen Williams, though, shout out Jalen Williams, because since Chet has been out, he leads the Thunder in touches per game at just under 100. So he's been handling the ball the most. And then he's obviously playing small ball five. I saw, I think, teams are shooting like 45% at the rim against him, which is insanely low. So shout out Jalen Williams, who I think actually has a pretty good case for DPOY right now.
Yeah, I don't think I necessarily just, I'm not going to say no to that. I'm just kind of still stuck on, I'm just glad that other people are picking up on this Steph Castle stuff. So I don't
know. Dude,
have
he looked really good. Like, he's like,
good. He's
he
really
has the
good.
Ball at, like, the free throw line, and he's immediate. Like, again, I know he had a lot of turnovers, but, like, from what I watched, I didn't watch the whole game, from what I watched, right, like, every time he had the ball on the high post, he immediately knew where to go with it. And then defensively, what he can do, I think, is going to be, we haven't even really seen the best of that yet.
Yeah. Well, and I think what has been keeping me from just completely overflowing with Stephon Castle's going to be an all-star type of takes is the offensive game and the shooting efficiency that is nowhere near where it needs to be to be that caliber of player. Again, this kid's, what, 19, right? So he's got time. But in the 8 games since he entered the starting lineup, those shooting averages have been skyrocketing up. Again, there was really nowhere to go but up after the first 7 games of the year, but in these 8 starts, Adam, 42% from the field, 34.2% from 3 on basically 5 attempts per game, 76% from the free throw line, which is more than serviceable if you're doing the job he's doing, running the offense, you know, in that point guard role when Chris Paul's off the floor, playing off the ball when he or Trey Jones is on, and the individual defensive assignments that he's taking on with this team right now. Again, I know I talk entirely too much about the Spurs, but go watch Steph Castle for yourself. He's a very impressive young prospect.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's clearly evident if I'm the one that brought him up.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted
so you
to
can't
you
even you
on
can't
that.
Even say that you're being biased. Like, I'm the one that brought it up. So, yeah, all right, Cavs, Spurs, we're good.
Yeah. We'll leave that in the rear view. Let's talk about another team that has been talked about a ton this week. And again, for very good reason. The turmoil surrounding the Philadelphia 76ers has turned up to 11. I don't know if we have an amplifier somewhere that goes to 12 because it feels like it could get even worse. But this report on Tuesday morning comes out, Adam, detailing the post-game team meeting that we assumed happened when all the beat reporters said the team did not come out of the locker room for an hour after the game to speak with the media. So reportedly, and you can go read more about this, I believe it was Shams Charania on ESPN who wrote up this article first. In this meeting, Tyrese Maxey called out Joel Embiid. The meeting was organized by veteran guard Kyle Lowry. And young Tyrese Maxey is sitting here calling out recently extended gold medal winning MVP, former league MVP Joel Embiid about being late to, quote, everything, which, again, on the surface, when you have a young guy calling out a veteran like that, that's just not a good sign. Whether Embiid or anybody else thinks that Maxey may have been out of line for saying something like that to a guy of his caliber, that is not a good sign. You're the leader of your team should not be having to be told by anyone, much less Tyrese Maxey, that he needs to be on time and respect his teammates and his coaches and the entire process. No Philadelphia pun intended there. Embiid then trolls afterwards to reporters saying, again, jokingly, like, oh, we had a meeting? I didn't know. But it's like, brother, take it seriously now? This is the time to be serious. There's plenty of time to be joking. And then last night from Tony Jones at The Athletic, he says, when asked about Monday's team meeting in Miami, Sixer star Joel Embiid said, quote, whoever leaked that is a real piece of shit. And again, like, it just, everything coming out of this meeting and the fallout, it does not seem like Joel Embiid has the, what I deem to be the correct team-oriented perspective. It doesn't seem like he's taking it seriously. It seems like he's kind of over the entire situation here in Philadelphia. Now, they played Memphis last night on Wednesday. Tyrese Maxey came back, limited 20 minutes.
Missing players, George, too.
Paul Memphis. George hyperextends the same knee he injured in the preseason. Sixers lose. They're 2-12. That's the worst record in the league. 2 to 4 weeks for Paul George. I think it's probably longer than that. We don't have an official timeline yet. But again, he just went through this same injury. It is bad. Again, I think it can and may get worse here in terms of the vibes coming out of the Sixers locker room. What is your take on this entire thing? Because this is not just like we've lost a couple games in a row and we had a little argument in the locker room. They are 30th out of 30. They are last place in the NBA. And we are now exactly a month into the season. It is all going wrong in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mentioned a couple minutes ago about how these quote-unquote bad teams are playing tough. And that's very true. But even with the players and the situations they've had where they've been missing guys, you can't be 2-12. You can't have the worst record in the entire NBA. I don't care. And then Embiid's, you know, he's obviously been back. It's kind of been the same thing with him. Like, he's still one of the most dominant players in the NBA. But then defensively, like, he's still been lazy on the defensive glass. And, Jared McCain's been great, but it hasn't even mattered because nothing else is going right now for them. It's brutal. If there was a team that couldn't afford to start this slow, it's probably Philadelphia, because you know Embiid's going to sit these back-to-backs the rest of the season, and now Paul George is going to miss, I agree with you, probably at best like 3 weeks. The bench isn't there. Like, getting the production they've gotten from Jared McCain has been huge, obviously, but like, he's starting now. So like, the bench looks even worse probably because he's starting now. I feel for Philadelphia fans because, like, they remind me of the Bills in a lot of ways. Like, they have this MVP elite player, but they haven't gotten over the hump. And I don't know how they get there this year with the way this has started and the way things are looking. Like, it's even more frustrating because you knew there was risk when you built a top three around Maxey, who's obviously the young star, and then you have two veteran star players as well, but who have battled injuries, and now we've seen dealing with injuries already. It's just like, I just don't see how this solves itself. Like, what's the best case scenario for them to finish as like the sixth seed? Like, luckily other teams are struggling too, like Miami, Milwaukee, right. But they have to get hot, and I don't know how, like, this team is still good enough if everything shifts to being positive, if they have just Maxey and Embiid for a stretch, to win 8 out of 10. Like, I still think they're there if everything's going right, and right now everything is not going right.
Yeah, and I think, like, we haven't even brought up the idea that, like, Joel Embiid is legitimately injured and his knee is not right. And so, like, again, could it get quote unquote better and they fight their way into the play-in, or maybe even
can't get worse? Literally, quite literally, cannot get worse. You're the worst team in basketball right now.
I just think it can get worse, like, just from like the vibe standpoint, like, because right now, right, like, as bad as it feels, I think you're 3 games back of the 10 seed and a play-in spot.
That's so ridiculous,
right? But if you go another, 2-8 in your next 10, now you're probably 6 games back of that. Like as weird as it feels to say, I think it can get worse. And like, to go back to your Bills comparison, like, can you imagine reports coming out of Keon Coleman has to tell Josh Allen to be on time for things? Like, this is ridiculous.
I think Maxey has earned that, like, right to call players out. But the fact that it's Embiid is where it's kind of like, whoa. Like, Maxey absolutely is, like, I think Maxey can be, he is a leader on that team at this point. Like,
yeah.
But the fact that it had to be Embiid to be mentioned with that is just where it's like, it's not a good look.
Yeah. And it's not that we're saying that, you're not playing well enough, or you're not executing what we want on the offensive or defensive end, or that even that you're just like maybe being kind of a jerk to your teammates or your coaches. No, it's that you're not even here when we're supposed to be in a spot as a team, right? Whether it's film or practice or to the bus to go to the arena or the play, like they're saying late for everything. And it's just, again, I've been around teams as a player, as a coach, at the collegiate level, right? As a professional coach, it's unacceptable no matter what level of sport that you're at. It is head scratching from the outside looking in, and that's probably putting it nicely. And not to continue the bad vibes here, Adam, D'Anthony Melton undergoing season-ending ACL surgery, which obviously is a bummer for the Warriors and for Melton, who has struggled with injuries kind of throughout his career, and specifically over the last 2 seasons. He's on this 1-year, almost $13 million deal with the Warriors. And I think, to me, Coach Kerr kind of summed up my feelings about this injury, that it is a significant blow to the Warriors and their chances, but they are also lucky that they are a deep team and they have guys that can fill in. As bad as that is, I think, because D'Anthony Melton was going to be the starting 2-guard for this team going forward, they have guys that can step in. Right now, it's been Lindy Waters III, which we'll see if that sticks over the long haul. But I feel awful for Melton. Same. Because he's a guy that I really enjoy watching from a real basketball standpoint.
Going back to the Sixers, I was so excited when they had him, and then he had the back issue that he couldn't work through, and then I was a little bit worried going into the season if it was going to flare up again with the back, and it ends up being the ACL. And just like at this point, just like, you really feel for him.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about, let's pick it back up here to end episode 24. Some games we're eyeing this weekend, just a 4-game slate tonight here on Thursday. I had Pistons at Hornets written down because a lot of young talent here, right? With Cade Cunningham against LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller against Jaden Ivey, right? Like this is a game that I think, from a fantasy and a real,
even Mark standpoint. Williams and Durant. Oh, Durant's still hurt. He was hurt.
Right? Other way around, Mark.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Hurt.
Yeah, Durant should be in. But again,
would love that.
I also think that Lakers Magic is the nightcap here tonight, and I will probably have that on my TV at least after the Spurs game and my Steelers on Thursday night.
I was going to say, yeah, you will be busy tonight.
Oh yeah, I'll be watching 2 terrible games.
We might have our first snow game tonight too.
Yeah, yeah. And hey, the Steelers love that cold weather traditionally. But Friday is the night for me here in the NBA for this weekend, because we have another, of course, round of group stage games here. I think Mavericks at Nuggets. Unfortunately, Luka Doncic was ruled out this morning for at least the next week with a wrist issue. But I think we will get Jokic back from the absence of late due to the birth of his child. And I think Mavericks, Nuggets, Luka or not, is a game that I will certainly have my eyes on. Pacers at Bucks, Adam. That is a rematch of one of the knockout games in last year's tournament. A
little bit of bad blood, too.
Absolutely. So I am excited to tune into that. I think Atlanta at Chicago is one to watch, just because Atlanta is 2-0. And if they can beat Chicago, they'll be 3-0, and they will have a date with your Cavs to potentially win East Group C. The Hawks, 2 wins away from being an upset group winner and into the knockout rounds here. What do you think about that there in East Group C? Because you've got Hawks 2-0, Celtics and Cavs both 1-1 on their heels.
Yeah, we've talked about Atlanta probably the third most of any team other than Cleveland and San Antonio, I feel like. again, I like what I'm seeing from them. I think they have a lot of versatility with the wings, and obviously you have Capella and Okongwu. Trae Young is always going to be a catalyst for a pretty good offense. Jalen Johnson, I think, is a legitimate all-star candidate this year. He's been that good. He still leads his team in touches per game. I like Atlanta, man. Like, I think you can make the case right now, like, with everything that's going wrong with these other teams, like, you can make the case they might be the fourth best team in the East. I really think that's not outlandish to say.
Yeah. I hope not, right?
Yeah.
Because as I've said before, unprotected Hawks pick is in the clutches of the Spurs. But the other game I wanted to highlight here for Friday.
Also, Dyson Daniels just got another steal.
Yeah. Oh, my God, dude. He's been, I mean, we could do 30 minutes on Dyson Daniels.
Darius Garland needs to be on his A game if we play Atlanta, because holy hell.
Yeah.
Dude's insane.
But in the West, and particularly West Group A, we get Portland at Houston on Friday. And those are the two teams that are 1-0 in West Group A. So the battle for the top spot here through two games, that's one that I'll have my eye on, right? Blazers, Rockets, typically I wouldn't care very much. I would maybe check in throughout the game, watch the highlights the next day, what have you. But that'll be on one of my screens Friday night as well. On Saturday, the only game that I really have interest in here, Nuggets at Lakers. Again, we should definitely have Jokic back by then, so I'm looking forward to that. And then on Sunday, Wolves at Celtics is one I have my eye on during our NFL Sunday, and Clippers at Sixers. I wrote that down before the Paul George injury last night, Adam, so now I don't care as much for that game, but I was looking for Clippers visiting their former star. Anything else for you on the schedule this weekend?
Other than the fact that Josh Allen doesn't play football this week, so that's that stinks. But no, I think anytime you get to watch Jokic is fun, obviously. And you mentioned that Portland game. It's like, yeah, there's a reason why League Pass is so popular, because even teams like Portland, like, their young core has been kind of fun to watch this year. Shaden Sharpe's really fun. Why am I blanking? Klingon's been pretty fun. Mm-hmm. So even those games, that's why, even we have some of these teams that just aren't as competitive record-wise, like, it's just fun to watch these young players really improve and play well each and every game.
Closing it out, as we always do with Stock Up, Stock Down, we will begin with Stock Downs. What's your Stock Down here on episode 24?
It's the Miami Heat. I feel like we've been talking about the Heat, you and I, on podcasts for a while, how we've had some concerns about their half-court offense.
Yeah.
Their best player this season through the first month or so has been Tyler Herro, which is good news for the Heat and bad news for the Heat at the same time, because that means Bam and Butler haven't been as good, and Bam has been, he's one of my favorite players on the planet, and it pains me to say, but he's not been very good this season. His efficiency on the mid-range has been really low for him, and his rim protection has been down in terms of the efficiency-wise. Butler hasn't been as good. Like, it's great that Tyler Herro has been as good as he's been, but if he's been the best player on your team, you have no shot, especially when you are relying on Jimmy and Bam as much as you are. So I'm worried about them. I really am. And maybe it's a good sign saying, okay, we know. Maybe you could look at it the other way, too, and say, okay, we know Jimmy and Bam are going to get going. And the fact that Hero's already playing so well, that gives us a nice floor. But I just think this offense's ceiling is still kind of low when they're as inconsistent and inefficient as they've been in the half court for a year plus now.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. Like, right, 6-7, which, again, to illustrate how weak the East right now, that is the 5 seed, 6-7 in the East. But, I mean, wins over Charlotte, Detroit, Washington, 1-point win over Minnesota on the road, that's very solid. They beat the Pacers on the road, lost to the Pacers the next time out, and then the crappy Sixers, right? They got blown out by the Magic. They lose by 9. Against the Knicks, they lose to the Kings, they lose to the Suns, they lose to the Nuggets, right? Also losses, like I mentioned, to the Pacers and Pistons. So I think that's a pretty good shout by you there. I'm just going to very quickly once again say my Stock Down is Joel Embiid for all the reasons we mentioned today on the pod. And I just saw our buddy Adam Stranges here post a link. Apparently Paul George and Reggie Jackson have released a podcast episode detailing the Sixers team meeting. Yeah, so I will go watch that as I'm editing this podcast. Let's close it out with stock up. What's your stock up here on episode 24?
I'm going to go Franz. Stay in Orlando or stay in Miami or stay in Florida. I'll eventually get it right. Paolo goes down and it's like, all right, this team, Paolo is ascending into a top 15 player in the NBA, but he goes down and it's like, okay, we're not good enough offensively. We have questions on offense with him as a team, but man, are they still on the win streak, right? Or do they lose?
They lost last night to the Clippers.
That's right.
Yeah.
But Franz, since Paolo has gone down, 24.5 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, 6 assists. He's still only shooting about 32% from three, so that's still something they need to see more from. But he is – I've been watching a lot more Orlando games. Mm-hmm. He's a lot better defensively than I realized, too. Like, a lot of chase down blocks. He's really disciplined in the post. He's been awesome. Is he a top 25 player in the NBA right now?
Maybe.
The problem I had with looking at it is, like, where do you put him among the, like, often banged up players, right? Like the Zions and the like Kawhi's, obviously. Like, if you give me Kawhi healthy, he's better. But like, if you're just ranking 25 players, like, I think he kind of falls in that like 25 to 27 range, which is good. There's a lot of good players in the league. Yeah. I struggled with where to put him though, with a lot of the players that are often, you know, out.
Yeah. Well, I know one thing. If you're going to tell me there's healthy Kawhi Leonard, Leonard is nowhere near 20-25 for me.
Yeah, 100%.
But I'm biased, so my stock up here is this isn't my stock up, but DeMar DeRozan will return tomorrow against the Clippers for the Kings Cup game.
So De'Aaron Fox won't go for 50 or 60, you're saying?
Well, he still may.
I almost put him in stock up too.
Yeah, I mean he's been very good without Sabonis and Monk and DeRozan. I know they're going to welcome DeMar DeRozan back to that rotation with open arms. But my stock up here in episode 24, Adam, is just the 2024 rookie class, because I was part of the cacophony of voices that said this draft class is not great, right? The guys that were taking in the top four or more like 8 to 12 type of prospects in a stronger class. I think we are all, most all of us who were on that kind of train, are being proven wrong here to start the season, because let me just list off these guys, right? His number one pick should be making an impact, but I think he has shown a lot to anybody who doubted his ability to be a strong NBA caliber asset. Zachary Richache, of course, the number one pick, right? Alex Sarr, I think, has had some flashes for Washington. We knew that was going to be a project. Reed Shepard at 3 doesn't get a ton of tick for Houston, but we know they were guard heavy coming into the year. You get past that top three, Adam. We talked about Stephon Castle, right? Donovan Clingan has been more than serviceable in relief of DeAndre Ayton over the last week. Zach Edey, we know the effect he's had on Memphis in a starting role or off the bench. He's week to week right now with the ankle injury. Bob Carrington has been awesome for the Wizards, even with their league high 9-game losing streak right now. What you're getting out of Bob, the 14th overall pick this past year, and how young he is, the Wizards fans have to be excited about Carrington. Jared McCain, who we've talked about multiple times. Don Connect, right? The teens were loaded here, right behind those guys. Tristan Da Silva has been in the starting lineup for the Magic. And you mentioned the Magic won 6 straight before breaking that streak last night in the loss to the Clippers. Jalen Tyson was on triple-double watch last night for the Cavs. I don't care if it was against the G League Pels. This kid steps into the lineup and produces.
I think like one of the first plays of the game, too, was like literally like embodied the type of player he is. It was a miss and it was an offensive putback immediately. I was like, oh,
yep. That was his first play, was the offensive putback. Yeah. 2 points and a board. Eve Misi's been starting for the Pelicans. Keyshawn George has been playing a role for the Wizards and not looking terrible. And then we talked about Ryan Dunn at length on the pod as well. So right, name like 12 guys there in the top 25 picks that are playing significant roles and exceeding most of those guys, exceeding expectations. Like, I think the stock up for the 2024 draft class isn't just for episode 24. I think it's going to be reflected in history as an example to look back on in future draft classes that we think are quote unquote down years. Like, there is still a lot of talent in the basketball world year in and year out. And a lot of these teams looking like they got some steals.
Yeah, I like that call, especially because, like, yeah, I felt the same way about this draft class. It was like, how many, like, all-stars are coming out of this class? And that's still kind of, you know, All-Star is kind of a loose term because it really depends each year. But, like, that's still in question. But a lot of these players are contributing right away. And I think Reed Sheppard is somebody that if he were on a team that wasn't as deep and ran as deep of a rotation as Houston, he'd be – like, he's talented enough to be, like, a Rookie of the Year candidate. It's just he's on a team that's playing well and they're very deep. So, and, yeah, I mean, what do we always see with rookies, too? It's the second half of the season was when usually rookies really start to – you know, get going. And the fact that we're not even in December yet and we're seeing these contributions, Jared McCain, like the last six games has like been obviously awesome. So it's been fun to watch. And I think there's really only room to grow for these guys.
Anything else for you, Adam, before we shut it down here on episode 24?
Yeah. Tough day to be on the pod. I almost didn't do it with the Cavs losing. just felt weird. Felt weird to see the loss in the win loss column. Yeah. But I'm excited for football tonight. I kind of hope the Steelers lose just so the Cavs have some room in the top of the 8-2 Steelers, man. Like, I think they probably win this game like 24-6, to be honest with you. But, yeah, man, just always a good time on Thursday. You have the combination of basketball and football, which is pretty much my day to day anyway. So always appreciate it.
Only thing I have to add is, I haven't heard a lot of those Mike Tomlin detractors in the Steelers fan base over the last couple of weeks.
Listen, you know, I've said this to you before. My favorite team is the Buffalo Bills. So by default, like, my favorite coach is Sean McDermott. But
right.
Mike Tomlin, if the Bills for some reason didn't have a head coach, it was just like Josh Allen was the head coach and quarterback, my favorite coach in the NFL would easily be Mike Tomlin. And it has been. He's amazing.
Yeah, it turns out the guy who has never had a losing season –
yeah,
it's pretty good when you improve the roster and don't and have like Duck Hodges or Mason
Rudolph. 36-year-old Russell Wilson's the best quarterback he's had in a decade. So,
absolutely. I was sitting there looking at mock drafts earlier today. Jalen Milroe taking first round quarterbacks. We'll see. We don't have to dive into the NFL talk here. You can find that, of course, at ftnfantasy.com through all of our NFL channels. You have the preview podcast, right? Did that?
Yeah, that's why Thursday is such a fun / busy day because I record the game by game podcast every late Wednesday night, edit it, and write articles Thursday morning. Hop on the pod with you here about 1 o'clock, and then I look at the clock, and before you know it, we only have a couple hours till football starts. So yeah, you can check that out. Weird week this week though because six teams on bye, dude. I'm in a league where I have to fill two roster spots, my second running back and a tight end. I have to drop players if I want to field a starting lineup that I have no business or anybody should have no business dropping. And I'm still debating it. It's a tough week.
Yeah. Bipocalypse, as some people have been referring to it. So check out all of Adam's content, all of our other NFL and NBA content, prepping you for the weekend ahead in the NBA, week 12 in the NFL. And I'll be back on Monday with Mike Randall for another episode of the FTN Fast Break podcast. Appreciate you tuning in. Hit the like button on YouTube if you're watching there. Subscribe to the podcast, rate and review wherever you get your podcast. And we'll see you guys back here on Monday. Enjoy your weekend. We will do the same. Until then, he's Adam and I'm Zach. Goodbye.